Hi, I'm Diane Chandler.
And I'm Perry Grossman.
And this is Own Your Throne. Ladies, your life is not over. You are just at the beginning of reigniting and redefining your life.
And through this show, you will meet inspiring women who have recreated and redefined what it really means to thrive and age gracefully.
Our guests are some of the most inspiring women on the planet. We were honored to sit down with each of them and get real about their own journeys and what it took for them to truly own their throne. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Own Your Throne podcast. We're so excited you've chosen to join us again for this conversation. Hi, Pear.
Hi, Jay. How's it going in San Diego land?
It's good. Things are opening up. All the restaurants are open up now and the schools. You know, we had Dr. Shaka on a couple weeks ago and talked a lot about how she feels the schools should open, and they've opened based on science, of course. And so we're really excited. It's starting to feel a little more normal here. People are taking a deep breath. You see a lot of people out and about, you know, wearing their masks, being safe, but it's good.
That's so awesome. I know here in Sun Valley, I don't know, we kind of think that, COVID-19, what? Because we're outside. You know, this is a place where everybody recreates outside. We still have to wear masks, but things have been open for a while, so it's been a little bit different. And I know when I came to visit you in California, too, it was shut down. It was kind of weird. It was eerie.
I know.
I'm glad it's back for you.
Yeah, thanks, honey. And it's been kind of a good week and a sad week, and I'm really excited that our guest today is going to be talking about fear, because I've really come up against it this week. And so I'm really, really looking forward to the conversation. So, Pear, what's been going on in your world?
Well, you're going to laugh at me, but I had to take my son, my 18-year-old son, to the orthodontist, or not orthodontist, endodontist, to get his wisdom teeth out.
Oh.
And I have never seen, so this was so weird. I don't know if this is where they do it, where you guys are, but so walked in, doctor came out, you know, he looked like he was 24 and the nurses looked like they were 22. My son was very happy about this. Yes. And so they actually let me go into the room with him.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, wow, am I going to see blood? That's kind of disturbing. I don't know if I want to see that, but they let me stay in there while they were hooking him up, and they gave him the medicine to start going to sleep. And as he was starting to go to sleep, this is the first time I saw him go under. And for me as a mom, my heart was just like, oh, you know, and so I had to leave, and I left, and it was done in 30 minutes, but, you know, talk about fear. Yeah, that was a fear that came up for me. That was
That's scary. Yeah, that's scary when you put your kids under. I've done that a couple times. All three of my girls had their tonsils or their wisdom teeth or something out. And so, yeah, it's a scary feeling. I wouldn't want to go in.
No, I know. Those mama bear fears, which we're going to talk about. Well, speaking of our guest, we are so excited. I'm going to tell you about this lady. She is a rock star. This woman, her name is Rhonda Britton. She's an Emmy Award winner, a repeat Oprah guest, which is big in itself. She's a master coach. She's the author of 4 bestsellers, including her seminal work, which is called Fearless Living. It was her first book. And she's the founder of the Fearless Living Institute, home of the Ivy League of Coaching Training. And I love this part, since we're both coaches, Di, you'll love this. She was also named as America's favorite coach. So, Rhonda, welcome to Own Your Throne, babe. I'm so glad you're here.
Welcome, welcome.
Life coach, I was voted it. And I also like won a Coach of the Year award in another group too, and then Smart. So it's like, you know, it's cool, and that's wonderful. And, you know, every day as coaches, we got to prove our worth, right? We got to like give the goods. We got to change lives. We got to transform. We've got to walk the talk.
That's right.
Right.
It was lovely. I got to walk the talk, girl.
No.
Well, we're so excited about this topic. And I read so much about you. So is Di. So our first question is what is fearless living? And then can you tell us what happened to you? Because there's always something that happens to us, right, that becomes our platform. And so would you tell our listeners what happened to you so that you created this fabulous platform?
Absolutely. So I think your first question was, what is fearless living? And I'll simply say that fearless living for me is the journey to live the life your soul intended. It is not about jumping out of a plane, you know, because a lot of people think like fearless, oh, do I have to, you know, handle snakes? Do I have to speak? No. don't have to do any of those things, because there's a difference between physical fears and emotional fears. And physical fears are about survival, right? Like, oh, I'm going to die if I touch the snake. Well, emotional fears are the fear of rejection, fear of failure, fear of being worthless, fear of not being good enough, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the emotional fears that I specialize in, and really how people know that they have them. I'll give you a quiz in a minute. But really, if you're stuck, or if you're doubting, or if you're, you know, just you find yourself not living the life your soul intended, then I know that fear is at play. And, you know, the question you asked me is like, well, how did I get here? Blah, right? Like, ah, I'll tell you about the worst day of my life, because that's really where the catalyst became, as you said. You know, we all have our story. And it happened for me. I was 14 years old in a little tiny town in Upper Michigan. I'm a Youper. At 365 inches of snow a year, two restaurants, fancy Douglas House Buffet Hotel and Big Boy. We had no fast food, nothing else. And we never went out to brunch because that's expensive in restaurants. You know, basically, if we got a pizza, we were lucky, right? Mm-hmm. And so today was Father's Day, and my parents had recently separated, and my dad was coming out to take us a Sunday brunch. So I was pretty gosh darn excited. My mother made all our clothes. I had a pretty white dress on that my mother made. And my two sisters are, you know, we're in our 800 square foot house. We have one bathroom. My two sisters are fighting it out in the bathroom. My dad walks in, come on, come on. My mom's like, let's go. So me, my mom, and dad start walking out. My sister's still in the bathroom fighting it out. And as we're walking out, my dad says, I got to get my coat from the car. It's starting to sprinkle outside. And so as he opens his trunk with my sister still fighting in the bathroom, I noticed that he does not grab a coat. Instead, he grabbed a gun and he started screaming, I started screaming, what are you doing? What are you doing? And he cocked the gun. He shot my mother once, and I'm frozen, right? Like my father just shot my mother, and he cocks the gun again, and he puts the gun in pointing to me. And I absolutely believe I'm next, without a doubt. And he blinks and I blink, and it's like a stare down. And my mother, who already has one bullet in her, sees my father with that gun in my face and screams, no, don't. And my father, realizing my mother's still alive, takes that bullet intended for me and shoots my mother a second time.
Oh, God.
And that second bullet goes through my mother's abdomen, out her back, and lands into the car horn. And for the next 20 minutes, all I heard is, eh, and then my father cocks the gun again, jumps to his knees, puts the gun to his head, and fires. Oh. So in a matter of 2 minutes, I was the sole witness of watching my father murder my mother and commit suicide in front of me.
Oh, honey.
So I don't know how you would respond, but this is what I did. I blame myself, because I was the only one physically there that could have changed the event, right? I didn't jump in front of my mother. I didn't grab the gun. I didn't kick my father in the shins. All I said was, stop, what are you doing? Stop. That's all I said. Like I did not make an impact. And now they're both dead. And so for the next 20 years, I basically split in two. There was the outside me, right? Class president, leading singer in the choir. Now, remind you, I went to a school with 97 people in class, right? So I just pretended everything was fine. I still got straight A's, got a scholarship to college. Now I'm fine. But inside the negative self-talk, the just the horrible blame and shame. And I can just see it simply this way. When you watch your mother die, you don't get to be happy. You just don't. Mm. You just don't get to be happy. Mm. So when I hit college, I discovered alcohol, started drinking, became an alcoholic, got 3 DUIs. Tried to kill myself 3 times. And it was that third suicide attempt that I realized something. I realized I'm not very good at killing myself, and I got to figure out another way. Now, I do want to say this, that during those 20 years of me drinking and suicide and DUIs and jail time, it wasn't like I was sitting back not doing everything. You know, I'm a straight A student. So, you know, I went to workshops and I read books and I went to therapy and I did everything I could, like everything. And I remember after that third suicide attempt, they deemed me not crazy because they put me in a psychiatric ward for evaluation, because that's what happens after you try to kill yourself 3 times. They deemed me not crazy. And I remember going to my little studio apartment by myself and realizing that I'm not dying. And if I'm not dying, which is what I wanted to do, I can't keep living like this. Mm. And I got to figure out another way. So again, all those books and workshops and therapy were nice, but they didn't actually change my opinion of myself. They didn't change how I saw myself. They didn't change the world for me. They gave me tools, but they didn't change me at the core. Mm-hmm. And so I actually, that day, when I got home from the psychiatric ward, I started making up exercises for myself. And the first one I made up, I said to myself, well, I have to go back to kindergarten. I remember so vividly saying that, I have to go back to kindergarten. So I went out, bought some gold stars and a calendar, and I started keeping track of anything good I did to prove that I was worth saving, to prove to myself that I had a right to be alive. And so at the end of 30 days, I had a calendar filled with stars. That calendar is in my office. I still have that calendar. And that was the beginning of my journey home to myself. And I started then just making up exercises for myself. And I just, you know, that's what, you know, when I was on Starting Over, when I was on, had my TV show, Help Me Rhonda, Celebrity Fit Club, all those TV shows I was on, that's what I did. I created unique exercises for each person's problem, because that's one of the things, who knew I had the gift, but I do have the ability to create something really unique. And so I did that for myself without knowing, without understanding what I was doing. Right.
Right.
And I never thought I would share it with people. I mean, I think I really want folks to hear that, you know, when I first started creating exercises for myself, I was ashamed of that. Mm. Right. I was embarrassed because therapy didn't help me. Workshops didn't help me. Books didn't help me. So I thought me creating exercises meant I was really screwed up. And it was only after, I remember this, I was at church and this couple I knew chased after me at church in the parking lot. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, nothing. I'm not doing anything. What are you talking about? I'm not doing anything. And they're like, no, you're doing something. And I'm like, And eventually they got it out of me. They asked for an exercise. I gave it to them. And then the next week at church, they came up to me and said, it's working. Get up as another one. And I was like, what? What?
That's amazing. I do a process because I work with younger girls, and it's called the Didwells. And at the end of the day, they write down all the things that they did well that day. It could be as simple as I smiled at someone in the hallway or anything. And then it writes down, and this is, what does that say about you? Yeah. What does that mean about you?
What kind of that?
Yeah, just so they can start getting a different picture of themselves. So I get that because I've seen miracles just with that process.
Yeah, if you can just start seeing yourself, you know, one of the things that I also, one of the transformations in my life was the realization, the moment I remembered so vividly, I was getting on a plane and I had this insight of what if my opinion of me is wrong? Mm-hmm. What if everybody else's opinion of me was right?
Mm-hmm. Great question.
That blew my mind. That blew my mind. You mean the way that I keep talking about myself, the things that are wrong with me, the things that are bad with me, the things that I'm not good at, la, 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 la. Mm-hmm. And everyone else is like, you're so creative. You're so this, you're so that. And I'd be like, you don't know me. How? You don't know what you're talking about. I remember fighting with my boss when I was like 25 about creativity. Cause I was like, I am not creative. And he'd be like, yeah, you are. I'm like, no, I'm not. I mean, I would fight. Like, no, you don't know me. You know, who didn't know me is me. I didn't know me.
You didn't know your worth. Do you think, you know, we've read through quite a bit of your stuff and your books and things that you've shared. Do you think the basic heart and belief inside of fear is truly not loving yourself or not believing in yourself or no self-worth?
I think that, you know, I always say that, you know, everybody has what I call the wheel of fear, and it's unique and personalized. Mm-hmm. But if you want to generalize it, I would say that 90% of the people that come to me say some version of, I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. I'm not good enough. So whatever that translates unique to them. So it might be, I'm not lovable, or it might be, I'm damaged goods, or it might be that I'm incompetent, or it might be that I'm stupid, right? Or it might be that I'm lazy. So individually, we have a word, right? A word that basically replaces the not good enough. But the generic way to talk about it is, I don't feel good enough. I'm not good enough. And then again, we personalize it to us about what really resonates with us. What's the word that resonates with us? And we have a whole process we take people through to help them really discover their core fear, because most people think they know what they're afraid of, but in actuality, that's not their fear. That's a symptom of fear, but it's not actually the fear itself.
So do you think it's an actual event that creates the fear? Or do you think the fear comes from within, from time you were born or a past
from
life?
Lots of different areas. Yeah. The one that was fascinating to me was the DNA that you said there were a bunch of different reasons people have fear. And when I saw that, it was like ding, 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 ding. Because how many times do you see that?
Yeah. Well, so people are sitting there beating themselves up, right? And, you know, why did I go to therapy? Why do people mostly go to therapy? And again, I love therapy, go to therapy whenever I need to. And, you know, when you go to therapy, for most people, they're looking for why. Why am I like this? Why am I like this? Why did this happen to me? Why? And the why actually never gets you the result you want. Why actually isn't the way out, right? So my, you know, people will say, well, of course you have fear because your father killed your mother in front of you. And I'm like, oh, I was 14. Your wheel of fear is confirmed and done by the time you're 5 years old. Mm. And it's how our brain works. It's our neurobiology. The way we work, literally our neurobiology, the way it works is that we are always looking for a way to save energy. Okay. So let's say we have 100 units of energy every day. Well, the way to save that energy is to actually judge. It saves energy to judge. It saves energy to compartmentalize. It saves energy to, you know, ignore people. It saves energy to do all those things on the day-to-day level, not long-term, but short-term. And so what the brain does to save energy is it looks at the past for a solution to the present. So your brain's like, oh, I've got this a relationship issue. And, you know, you're trying to be like, I'm going to do it different this time. But the brain's going, no, we have a template over here. Mm-hmm. And we go backwards and we go get the template and we put it on. And then we're like, oh, I'm doing it again. It's like, yeah, because the brain, if you are not conscious, if you're not aware, if you're not awake, if you don't take back your body and brain, it will always choose the past.
It's kind of what it knows. The ego is remembering. So how do you break that pattern? So someone is fear-based and they come to you and they want to break it. What are some of the principles or some of the tools that you walk them through the first time?
Before you start, can I add on to that question?
Sure.
So you say if someone's fear-based, do you believe that everybody has fear? Are we all fear-based in some way, or do some have a larger amount of it? Like,
definitely, you know, it's really, you know, fear is really based on the power of choice, right? Mm-hmm. And we can talk all day long about choice and people think they have choice, but they don't really feel like they have choice, right? Most people do not feel like they have choice.
Right.
You don't understand, Rhonda, I've got three kids. You don't understand, Rhonda, I've got a mortgage. You don't understand where I've come from, Rhonda. You don't understand. Oh, I understand. Right. I understand. And it's people's, again, past thinking their history is who they are, right? Thinking that like my mother and father dying in front of me, you know, for 20 years ran my life. I mean, I could not be happy. The other shoe was going to drop any minute. Anytime anything good happened to me, somebody was going to die. I mean, literally, that was my MO. You know, I got engaged, somebody's going to die, right? Anything good, death is around the corner, because you don't get to be happy without somebody dying. The cost of happiness is death. And I fundamentally believe that at the core of my being, not my true nature, not my soul, but because of my history, because of my DNA, because of my, you know, everything I've saw, that attitude. But my wheel of fear is decided by the time you're 5 years old, because of everything you've done, everything you've seen, all your experiences. And yes, that DNA, because they're now, as Diane said, you know, they're now recognizing that fear is actually handed through our DNA. So if you're sitting there going, why am I like this? And you can't remember a moment, which, by the way, it's not a moment. It's not a moment. It's lots of moments added up. Now you can like hopefully take that shame and blame off your shoulders and go, oh yeah, this is from my great, great grandmother who I never met. Okay. Got it. It's not mine. Right.
Right.
So does that help you to release
it? If someone tells you that and you have that, so again, going back to my question is, how do you break that pattern? And how do you break that belief that, you know, I had a similar childhood situation, encounter with my mom, put a gun to my head at 5 years old. She didn't pull the trigger. But, you know, at 5 years old, it definitely made an imprint onto me. And it took me many, many, many years to feel like I was truly lovable.
Yes.
She dealt with, you know, she's schizophrenic and all this stuff, but it took me until I was in my 50s, Rhonda, to really forgive her and to really truly believe inside of me that I had self-worth. And I did the same thing you did. You know, I went out and did a bunch of stuff and got a bunch of rewards and blah, 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 just to prove to the world that I was lovable and I was good enough. Mm-hmm. So how can someone that's listening right now start, what would be the first step that you would recommend that they can start in moving into that new process of changing that pattern and that belief?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. And really the first step is awareness. So I want to give a quiz to help people understand how fear shows up, because I don't know about you, but you know, even when I was in my darkest days, I never said I was afraid, right? I don't remember a day in my life where I went, I'm afraid or I'm scared. I was like, I'm fine. You know, I was in such denial and avoidance and could not even face the fear. And I think that's true for most people that originally hear my voice. You know, they go, well, I'm not afraid. I'm not scared. I don't walk around saying that. Well, I don't get it. Like, what? I have fear? I'll say one question and then I want to give a quiz. One of the things that I ask my clients is, you know, do you believe the world is for you or against you? Now, again, we all know the right answer, right? We all know the right answer. The right answer is the world is for me. And then I ask them, but is that how you act every day? Is that how you treat the world every day? Do you actually act like the world is for you, or do you act like the world's against you? And when I ask that question, people are like, oh gosh. Okay. All righty. I see your point, right? So do you mind if I give a little quiz just
go ahead, please.
So this quiz I'm going to give you is actually going to support you in seeing how fear shows up for you. Because again, I realize you probably don't walk around saying I'm afraid or I'm scared, but you do have symptoms of fear. So I'm going to give you a quiz. If you'd like to, if it's safe to, you can shut your eyes if you'd like. And what I'd like love you to do is nod your head so that you kind of own that you do these things or feel these things. So I'm going to read a list. If you do these or feel these, nod your head so you kind of own it. And don't lie to yourself, right? So do you ever deny yourself? Ever isolate yourself? Ever pretend everything's okay when it's not? Do you ever hide out? How about whine? How about settle? What about comparing? What about a little manipulation? Get defensive? Judge? Complain? Procrastinate? Do you ever wait and call it patience? Do you ever struggle or worry? Or feel blame, deflect, control? Do you ever feel bitter? How about powerless? Do you ever feel dissatisfied or resentful? What about entitled? Do you feel guilty, irritated, like maybe now? Do you feel ignored, overwhelmed, ever get victimized? What about annoyed? What about self-pity? So what percentage are we nodding our heads when I give that audience, when I give that question? Are you willing to share, ladies? What percentage you?
All of them.
I'm 100%. I'm with Di.
All of them. There was a point I could totally relate with all of them at some points, you know?
Yeah. So people think that overwhelm is not fear. So what people do is they go, oh, I've got all these problems. You know, I'm overwhelmed. I procrastinate. I'm a perfectionist. I'm anxious. Right? And they think they have all these problems. And they're like, I'm going to go to procrastination school because if I just stop procrastinating, that'll solve my problem, right? And they go to procrastination school and the school's really good and it teaches them not to procrastinate. But they're still overwhelmed, anxious, right? And a perfectionist. Well, fear could care less if you're a procrastinator or perfectionist. It does not care. Fear only cares about stopping you from going into the unknown. Fear wants to stop you from stepping into some place that it does not have a template that it knows what to do. Fear absolutely does not want you to go in the unknown. So it will do whatever it does. So it doesn't care, like you go to procrastination school. You and I both know what happens. We think we're doing like, I'm amazing. I'm like, wake. And then what happens? Another problem comes up. Mm-hmm. You start feeling worried, or you start finding yourself blaming or getting jealous. So people are focused on the fear symptoms, like, oh my God, I procrastinate. It's like, procrastination is not your problem. Mm-hmm. I'm a perfectionist. Trust me, perfectionism is not your problem. I just get so overwhelmed. Trust me, overwhelm is not your problem. Those are symptoms of a deeper fear that's how it's acting out. Mm-hmm. Once you start understanding how fear works, I always tell my clients that about a third to a 40% to even 50%, the minute you identify your fear, literally like 50% goes away. Like that day, like it's gone.
Really? 50%. Wow.
Because you see it, right? Because now the symptoms keep you occupied. So fear keeps on owning you. But once you see the symptoms and you take back, you know, your life, and you take back your brain, you take back your heart, you take back your thinking, you have awareness. Now you go, oh, I'm overwhelmed. Oh, I'm not going to buy into that. Ah, this is my fear plane. Okay. What am I going to do? Rhonda says, go from my wheel of fear to my wheel of freedom. Got it. I'm going to do that. And now you have a solution that works in every situation with everyone at any time. And so it anchors you back into changing your filtering system from one of fear to freedom. So, you know, again, people come to me with all sorts of problems, and the solution is really, you know, if you want to express yourself, you must know yourself. And when you know yourself, you actually see your fear for what it is, a protection mechanism, and you can decide consciously to get on what I call the wheel of freedom.
Mm. Is there any fear that's okay?
Oh, yeah. I mean, fear, we don't want to get rid of fear. And by the way, getting rid of fear is impossible. It's part of our neurobiology. It's baked into us.
Yeah.
So this isn't about, you know, fearless, i.e. I'm going to get rid of fear. And in fact, if anyone ever tries to teach you or sell you anything that says, I'm going to get rid of your fear for good, I would run the other way. And the next question I'd ask is, when's a lobotomy? Because we are wired for fear. Mm-hmm. Because it's a protection mechanism and a safety mechanism that is wired in us. What we need to do is actually start understanding how our brain works, how our body works, how our neurobiology works, so that we can be consciously aware and take our power back, right? Take our love back, take our worth back, take us back to live our life, our soul intended.
Our soul intended. Rhonda, I have a question for you about, because you've landed on this platform of fear, which is so powerful. And there had to be, it's not like right out of the chute, you were doing these charts and all of a sudden you were like, it's all about my fear, you know? And so, so my question to you would be like, how did you land here? It's like, you've done so much work for so many years, and how did you link it together that under all of this other stuff was fear that was running the program?
I'm actually going to tell you a secret that I very rarely tell. Mm. Because you know that I, Rhonda Britton, am not smart enough to do this on my own, right? All great, or I'm going to say great because I don't want to say like, oh, my great work. But this is not my doing. I think that anybody who is nudged to do their soul work, anybody that is called to do their soul work, what they forget and what I didn't know was, and you hear it, but you don't know it, so you don't do it, that really everything will be provided for you, but you must do the deep work of surrendering to it. I was actually on my PR agency at the time, and one of my clients was one of the very first life coaches. And he would say to me all the time, Rhonda, you're gonna be a better coach than me. I'd be like, no, because I am screwed up. Hello, jail time, suicide attempts, alcoholism, hello. And he'd be like, always, you're gonna be a better coach than me. You are a crazy man, right? And I also was going to Agape, which you may be familiar with.
Oh, I love that church.
Yes.
Becoming a spiritual practitioner, again, not because I thought I could help people. You know, they're like, don't become a spiritual practitioner unless you're going to do the work. And it's like, I'm doing it for classes because I am not healthy or well enough to help anybody, right? Mm-hmm. So I was going to that. I was going to another class. I mean, I was really in the throngs of immersing myself. And so I was in the office with my, you know, client, and we were breaking down his stuff that I was helping him with. And, you know, he has these big white boards in his office, and we're like brainstorming and trying to figure out the solution. And I remember, oh God, it was just feels like, I mean, I just think about it and it's just like right here. All of a sudden in the corner of my eye on the very top right, I'm just going to only say what I saw. I don't know how to describe it any different, but it's like the world opened up, a book came out, and it went like this. Shut and went away.
Wow.
First two things I did, I looked at Paul and he was still talking. And I was like, what?
You didn't see that?
And what I looked behind me, because I was convinced that wasn't for me. Like there had to be somebody else in the room. So I remember so vividly, like turning around going, you're not talking to me, right?
Right.
And then what happened during that time?
Wow.
Is every single question I had ever asked ever was answered. Mm. And I don't know how to describe it. It was like this flood. I mean, I was downloaded how the world works. Like I was just downloaded it. And I remember like staring at Paul, and again, he doesn't know what's going on and I feel like crazy. And the good news is I had an appointment with my minister the next day, and I ran there. Yeah. this thing happened, like the world opened up, and like I know everything now, and every question I ever asked, I know the answer. And you know, inside the message, inside the download was, now you must teach this, now you must share this, now you must do this. And I ran to my minister and went, I didn't even have my bachelor's. I was 3 credits shy of my bachelor's. And I was like, I have to get my bachelor's, and I have to get my master's, and I have to get PhD, and then I've got to write a book. And my minister kept saying, if you got the call, you're ready. And I was like, no, I'm not. You're crazy. And it took me 6 months of her saying,
right,
you got the call.
Mm-hmm. Like you were chosen. You were good enough, but you probably couldn't hear that message that you were good enough to receive a call, a spiritual call.
Yeah. Who am I? You know, I mean, remember, I'm the daughter of a murderer, an alcoholic, right, a full-time chick, you know, and I could say a bunch of other things that I did that aren't pleasant. Like, it's like, what? You know, I have loved God since I was a little girl, and I loved God. And I, before my parents died, I had told my mother that I was going to be a minister. And, you know, back in the day, that was a big deal that a woman was going to be a minister. And I remember the day my mother died, the very first thing I did was run into my mother's bedroom, got on my knees and said, dear God, please, God, please, God, please, God, if my mother stays alive, I will be a minister. But if she dies, promise is off. Like, no, like, it's not happening. Right.
Yeah.
Well, we know the answer. She died. And for 20 years, I put God on the other side of a line. I would have nothing to do with him, because what I heard in my mind, or what I experienced when that day that happened, I thought God was testing me. Mm. Oh, you want to be a minister? Let's see how you do here. Again, remember, I was 14 years old. So 14-year-olds always think it's about them, right?
Yeah.
It's like when I got that download, it felt like I came full circle, right? It was just like a full circle moment. And I had already gone through the process of forgiving my parents, which was, you know, big job. And I think, you know, forgiving my parents and really releasing my past, you know, if you want to talk, it's like gave me an opening, right?
Sure.
And I think the difference between me and other people is that I believed the voice.
It up. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I don't think I'm the only one that hears it. I think I believed the voice and acted on the voice, where other people hear the voice and don't act on it because they, you know, they have that worthy question, right? Like, who am I? But the difference between me and other people, I think, is that I actually was like, oh crap.
Spirit. Yeah.
Right.
How old were you when this happened?
I was 34. It was 20 years.
20 years.
It was like right around so on the 20th anniversary of my parents' death, I did an entire ceremony and really, I don't want to say put them to bed, but I spent a whole day in Coldwater Canyon in that little lake up on top of Mulholland, right? Mm-hmm. And I did this whole ceremony.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought I'd forgiven them before, which I'm sure I did at many levels, but this time I really did the work. I was there all day. Mm-hmm. And I remember turning around and walking back to my car going, these are the first steps I've actually taken as Rhonda. I've never walked as just me. It's always been carrying my mother and father. So this all happened at the same time, right? Like I forgave my, like this all was happening at exactly the same time when I got the download, I was doing the forgiveness work. So, I mean, I definitely think that there was this unique opening at this time and that I just had the support, the wherewithal, the courage to whatever, to go and get help and go like, what do I do with this? And everybody was like, do it.
Just on it. Well, that was one of the practical questions I wanted to ask you, is that when you receive a download like that, how did you remember all that you were shown? Did it, as you were writing it down, did you just came through?
Remember, it happened in milliseconds.
Yeah.
I was not writing it down. I was literally like, what is happening to me? And I'll say two things. One is, it literally is in my cells. You know, people say to me, how do you know how to how do you do what you do? I go, because I trust myself 100% completely, because I know it is not me. I know my soul is talking to your soul and I'm being told what to say. And I trust it completely. I have learned over the years. Now, don't get me wrong. I did not trust myself completely. You know, Paul, who was the guy I worked for, who was one of the first 5 coaches, became my mentor. And I would have a session, you know, it took me 6 months to have my first client. And then I would have a client and I'd run to his house and go, okay, she said this, I said this, she said this, I said this, she said this, I said this, right. What do I do, right?
Right.
But then after a certain period of time of me getting mentored and have an apprenticeship, I started realizing that I already knew this. You know what I mean? Like it was in my bones.
You knew it.
Yeah. I knew it from the download. So but yes.
Mind knowing.
What Perry and I had both, and I just wanted to add this in because it's so beautiful to hear you speaking to this. Perry and I both went to USM. I don't know if you know that, and got our master's in spiritual psychology. And it's really about the soul work, you know? And when you just said, when I'm coaching soul to soul, yeah. That so resonated because in that is where the healing is. You know,
so remember the first statement, Di, when we were in class, and I remember doctors, Ron and Mary Helmick, first thing I remember them saying is, we are all spiritual beings having a human experience.
Yes.
And that we're here just for the advancement of our soul. So when I hear a story like yours and yes. many others, where there's a lot of challenges, there's a lot like right at the gate, you know, like, here we go. It's, your soul is being advanced, you know, on a higher level, on a spiritual level. Mm-hmm.
And we have to take the moment and actually say yes to it.
Answer the call, yes.
Well, that was my next question. So I'm sure there's a lot of people out there listening and thinking, oh my gosh, I've gotten an idea or I've gotten what I think is a calling, but how do I know for sure it was that, or was I just, you know, drinking too much cough syrup or something, you know, where, how do we know it's real? Right. And then how do they get enough faith
yes.
to move into it as you did with no question? It was just in their soul.
Yep. Two things. One, I want to answer the second question first and then go back to the first one. I think people think, and I know I probably did this before too, I probably thought this as well, is that people think that because they get a soul's calling or a nudge, that they should be ready then to act on it. Mm. No, the insight, the aha, the idea, which I'm going to talk about in just a minute, is actually the call for you to step up and do the work necessary for your own soul to unfold, as well as the other. Like, it's not just, oh, I've got to work on myself first. Like, a lot of people say that to me, oh, I've got to work on myself first before I become a certified fearless living coach. And I'm like, that kind of happens at the same time. It's like, fix yourself, then fix up, you know, help others. And again, we don't fix anywhere. But I think what they think is that they should be done if they get the call. And the call is actually where the real work begins. Mm-hmm. So the real surrender, the real humility, the real vulnerability, the real willingness, like, you have to be willing because you have to grow into the person that you're being called to be.
Wow.
Right.
That's great. Yeah.
My mentor, right? I knew all the answers of the universe. I couldn't.
Yeah.
Do diddly squat with the information. Right. Wow. And it took me time and years. And then like, I hit a point where it was like, I'm good. Right. So that's the second part. The first part is, I believe, like, I'll just say it this way. Think of a time in your life where you had a millisecond, and I mean a millisecond of awareness, that you knew exactly what you were supposed to do. Like, just like a moment of clarity, like piercing clarity, right? You've ladies had that, right? Like, just piercing clarity, right? So what people do is they have that moment of piercing clarity, like, yes. And then what they do is they think about it. And then what they do is they decide if it's theirs or not. And really what happens is that moment of like again, the world downloading for me, that moment of clarity, that insight, what I tell my students all the time and my clients all the time is that moment is more important than any other moment in your life. And that moment is the carrot that is going to pull you, push you forward. And all you do is have to say yes. All you do is have to be willing. All you do is have to just go with it, right? But most people then evaluate it, right? Fear comes in. Remember, fear doesn't want you to take risks, doesn't want you to fall, doesn't want you to, wants you to be safe, doesn't want you to go in the unknown. And whenever you have that piercing clarity, you have no idea. And that's the part. Freedom, I always say freedom equals your capacity to live in the unknown. And yes, Rhonda Britton says that. Make sure you put me a quote. Freedom equals your capacity to live in the unknown. So that moment of clarity, that unknown is the thing that you must court, that you must like love, that like that is real. That is more real than making love with your spouse. That is more real than, you know, watching your, you know, kids get braces, right? Like it's more real.
It's so real. It's the divine unknowing, right? It's the surrender and the faith but it's, and trust.
There's a phrase that we always hear, the moment you're talking about when we're questioning it, it's we're putting ourselves up for vote. You know, have you done that? It's like, I mean, I know I do with my girlfriends. I'll do it with Di. I'll say some idea and I'll go, Di, I have this idea and I'm excited about it. And I'm like ready to go with it. And what do you think? And then I'm, so what do you think? Do you think, oh, is it stupid? It was stupid, wasn't it? Okay, just tell me if it was stupid. And Di's like, no, it wasn't stupid. It was like, but that is a natural process, I feel, especially with women, is well, that we tend to put ourselves up for vote.
Yeah, I get that totally. And I think the other fallacy is that you think the clarity you had is the end result. Mm. Oh, it's kind of like Matrix, right? The Matrix is like, she told you what you needed to hear, right? Like, that isn't really what it's about. That is just meant to pull you forward. Then you've got to be flexible and be, you know, listening, right? You've got to be close to, I call it close to the bone. You've got to be close to your bone all the time because it's not about that, right? It is just meant to wake you up, but it's not about that. So I think what happens is people get attached, right? They get attached to that moment of clarity and thinks that's what it is. And also, you know, I get ideas every damn day. And I know they're not mine to do, right? And I think I get ideas every day that are meant to inform someone else or something else. It's not meant for me to do it right now, this moment, right? It's just, I've got an idea. Like I've got, like, I can, you give me a problem, I'll come up with 20 ideas for you, right? So I think it's people get attached to the clarity and they think that's the goal instead of that is the impetus. That is the nudge. And that will get you this far. Like, I'll just use a simple, stupid example. When I was younger, all I did was want to be an actress, right? And I think of God going like this, huh? Okay, let's say Rhonda has to be able to speak. She's going to be on the first coach life coach on TV in the world. She's got to be comfortable in front of cameras. Okay, there's no such thing as life coaching right now. Okay, what can I have her do to help her build all the skills she's going to need when she's really doing her purpose, right? Mm-hmm. And so all I did was want to be an actress. So I came to Los Angeles in my little green Maverick, got a little studio apartment, you know, ate hamburger and potato buds every day. And, you know, my whole life was becoming an actress. And what did I learn? I did improv. I did stand up. I did, you know, I did all the things so that when, so then, and then it came a time where I realized acting wasn't for me and I, you know, I had to rip it out of my soul, right? And again, there still wasn't coaching. There wasn't anything like coaching. And all I did when I was an actress is pray for a series. Oh my God, could I have a series, God? Give me a series. Yeah, I just want a series. I just want a series, God, right? And there's no such thing as life coaching. There's no series with life coaches. Not, doesn't even exist, right?
Yeah.
I always say God had me want coaching. I mean, excuse me, had me want acting as a back secret way to give me the skills I needed in order to do my true life's calling. So at about 32, I gave up acting and it was like heartbreaking. I was in a deep depression because like, who am I if I'm not an actress? Then, you know, life unfolded. I started becoming a coach as I shared with you before. And then, and here I am a coach like for 4 or 5 years, I'm in London on my book tour and they're creating the very first reality show with a life coach. And who got it? Me.
That's so awesome.
I think this is like, I love this story because when you said the very first calling is like the nudge and then to stay open to, and like, it's all of it. It's the divine unknowing, it's the surrender, but it's also really seeping in your spiritual practice as well so that you can hear the calling, you can stay connected, right? You can follow the river. I mean, you're going to end up the same place, but you might take a different road. We don't know. And it's not being super attached. That's what I'm hearing you say. It's not being so attached that like the next door opened and it's like, here I am, come on through. And you're like, no, it has to be this way, instead of really following what's opening.
When I started realizing that I didn't want to be an actress anymore, the more I worked, the less I liked it. I liked acting classes, right? I liked improv and stand-up. I actually didn't like the actual acting itself, like being on a sitcom and being on a movie set. Like, I was like, oh, you actually don't like the craft of acting. You just like the classes.
You like the classes. Okay, that's cute.
That's brilliant. That's great. I got you there somehow.
Right. So then it was like me coming to the realization, it really took, I think it takes courage to leave a dream. And I always say, like, sometimes you have to leave a smaller dream for a bigger dream. Mm-hmm. And again, I thought acting was my dream. So giving up my dream was like literally ripping my heart out. But I also knew that it wasn't real for me anymore. And I had no idea what was going to happen. Because again, coaching didn't exist. Reality didn't. I mean, none of this existed.
Right.
How did you trust that process? How did you, when you let it go and your heart was broken and you felt depressed, how did you move into faith and trusting the process that you would be taken care of and moved into the right direction?
I think there's something that I've learned over the years, and maybe it's because of my parents. I'm sure it's because of my parents. I really know. I actually just taught this in a class yesterday. One of my students was like, my life's an upheaval. That's what she said. Like, my whole class was like, my life's an upheaval. I'm in upheaval. And I said, oh my God, that's so amazing. And they're like, what? And I go, that means you're changing on a cellular level. That means that you are up leveling. Like, you can't, like, your life will be an upheaval. You will go through a dark night. You will not be able to, like, when I've gone through my upheavals, like after acting, if you ask me, like, I think I'm a good prayer. Like, I can say a prayer like nobody's business. But if you had to pray during that time, I'd be like, dear God. And so I want to get a new chair. Thanks God. You know, like, I couldn't pray. Like, I couldn't put words together. Initially when this started happening to me, I thought something was wrong with me. Like, I'm going to go backwards. That's the other thing. People think they're going backwards. I'm like, no, this is actually your quantum leap. And in my class yesterday, I was talking about how this is your life in the past. This is your new life, right? Like, there's like let's just use levels, level 4 to level 6. And it's not quite right, but for lack of a better way, you're going from level 4 to level 6 and you're climbing the road. Like, you're taking reading books and you're doing all your work. I said, but the last little piece, you have to jump. It's literally changing you on a cellular level. It is literally changing your cells. And what most people do is they're scared of it and they run backwards. Mm. Right? And that's the very thing you must not do. You must keep going.
Mm. Well, that's what leads us to the fear question and what you teach. So now you're all, you know, you've gotten the call, you're moving along, you're living in surrender and the unknown and all this. And then how do you deal with your frickin' fear? Like,
the frickin' fear.
Right? Like all the voices in your head, all the past stories, all the, you know?
First of all, Diane, if you surrendered, you have faced a fear. Mm-hmm. If you've already heard the call and believe it, you've already faced a fear, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, so that's the thing. It's not like fear is, you know, we say like, you know, fear or love, right? You know, like of course says, right? You know, like a lot of ancient wisdom talks about the fear or love, right? And on some level, that's true, because neuroscience says that the only way to truly change your life is not by changing your thoughts or just changing the way, you know, your feelings. It's really, you must change your filtering system. So that is
what does that look like?
Well, that looks like, again, just understanding how fear works for you. That's why I spend time with people and I, you know, do the work I do, because if you understand what happens to you when fear is up for grabs. So like that I gave everyone, right? So you know fear is on patrol. You know it. Like, that's not a secret. You don't beat yourself up. You go, fear's on patrol. Got it. And then I'm going to put you into, and I'm going to give an exercise. I'll actually give two exercises today if you want me to. Knowing like, when I procrastinate, that's actually fear that's fear taking hold. It's not, nothing's wrong with me. I'm not a bad person. I'm not stupid. It's just fear. Oh, okay. So I'm about to step into the unknown, right? Am I willing to live in the unknown? And, you know, a question that I ask my clients all the time is, you know, are you making it up or, you know, is it true? So, you know, most of us make up stories to keep us stuck in the past, stuck in the, you know, who we think we are rather than allowing us to believe who we could be or the soul that we are, right? So, you know, so it's one is awareness. It's all about awareness, because if you do not know how you work in fear, you will not be able to catch fear. And if you can't catch fear, you can't change fear.
Got it.
So it's all about slowing down, becoming super aware. And again, these are the things I teach, is become super aware so that you actually see your fear before you even take an act. Like, you're going to start seeing your fear. You'll know it before you say anything. You'll know it like just a breath. You'll be like, oh, I can, like,
there it is.
Right, there it is. Right.
Okay.
And so I'll just tell you mine just quickly. My number one core fear, I Rhonda Britton, on the Wheel of Fear is loser. Okay. Mm-hmm. My essential nature on my Wheel of Freedom is authenticity. Now, wrap your head around this. If I'm afraid to be a loser, if I don't want anyone to think I'm a loser, am I going to be authentic?
No.
No.
No. No. You're going to be people please.
That's right. Yeah. So the very thing, right? So the very thing, right, that I must be is authentic. So I help people find that thing that, what do I call the essential nature, that rips through the fear and helps them get on their freedom track. Right? So whenever I'm like, oh, I'm procrastinating. Okay, Rhonda, where are you not being authentic? Where are you not sharing your true self?
Ooh, powerful. Yes.
Right.
The minute I step into authenticity, again, am I scared to step into authenticity? Of course I am. It's mm-hmm. not like gone. It's just like, oh, but I know what to do. Oh, now I can be, like, I'm going to practice being authentic. Okay, what would I say if I was being authentic? What would I do if I was being authentic? What, you know, where would I go if I was being authentic? Oh, well, I'd say this. Okay, say it. Go.
Well, say what?
You know, skills. So this is where skills come in. People think that they get an insight, they're going to be ready. No. Now, if I'm going to be authentic and I want to speak up, now I got to learn the skills of communication.
Okay.
Right? Like, it's always calling you, what do you need to learn next?
Calling you forward. What if you have a fear about something, like what I have happened this week was my nephew was diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Yes.
And so that's a fear of, like, loss, a fear of what if, and I'm getting ahead of myself, of course, because that's part of what fear does, right? It jumps you forward to make up a story that hasn't even happened.
That's correct. Yeah. So
what are the tools you give to people that lit, you know, that have something like this happen, or as Perry was going to ask you, living with, you know,
illness, yeah. Right? Chronic illness or some kind of a life-threatening disease. And you know how, I mean, I watched Di this week go through it, and it's, we have all kinds of people around us and friends and loved ones. And I agree with her. It's like, what do you say? How do you help someone work through that fear, including yourself?
Well, the first thing to do is, you know, if you have a spiritual practice, that's obviously going to ground you, of course. But if somebody came to me, and many of my students have situations like this, right? That's, it's kind of like when they're willing to face their fears, when a fear is something they can't deny, kind of like the global pandemic. Yeah. I say this is like the greatest time, because people are not denying their fear anymore. Mm-hmm. And if you can wrestle fear to the ground now, you'll be able to do it after the pandemic too, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like God's giving us this window. The universe is giving us this window of being able to see fear more clearly so that we can actually do something about it. So if Di came to me and said, you know, has brain tumor, the first thing I would say is, I'm so sorry,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because the first thing that we have to do is give full permission to the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
Full permission, because again, I think from a spiritual perspective, a lot of spiritual people say, oh, it's not real. And, you know, you gotta just act like it's not real. Like they deny the human experience. I actually believe that the more you embrace the human experience, the more divine your life will be, right?
Mm.
And the more you're going to see how that interconnected is connected. Like, being fearless isn't about not feeling sad, right? Being fearless isn't about not being heartbroken. Being fearless isn't about, oh, nothing bad's going to happen to you. That's not what it's about. It's about that you're going to have the tools then to do something about it. And one of the tools that I teach, and it's the first thing that I teach in almost every class, is compassion. And, you know, how do you gift yourself with compassion? And most people have no clue. Zero. They can be compassionate to others, but they cannot be compassionate to themselves. So, you know, if I was coaching Di right now, I'd probably be asking her like, right, how are you going to take care of yourself? And tell me what that looks like. And I would go to the worst case scenario. So what if he passes away? Let's talk about that. Like, I don't want to pretend. I don't want to deny all the things that this could look like. And I would actually expand it and include it all so that we could wrap it all, hug it all, like be with it all, and actually work through all the fears. Well, what if he passes? What if this happens? What if this happens? Like, we're going to actually go through those fears, those moments, so that she feels some solace. She feels comforted. She feels connected. And she feels at one, like she feels at peace, right? That's what we all want. We want to feel peaceful. Mm-hmm. So then she can be fully present and in peace at the same time.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
They're really beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So I have a little different question. It's going to sound a little wacky, probably. God loves it when wacky. I ask my wacky questions. But okay. So one of my greatest fears is being buried alive. Do you think something like that is a real fear, possibly from a past life? And I know I'm going a totally different direction. Or is it a phobia? Or, you know, is it, I mean, because it's really real. Even just putting me into an MRI machine, or, you know, they got to pump me up with so much Valium, or I'll go screaming down the hall of the hospital. I'm not kidding you. It's terrible. Yes. And even going in the water, like I learned, you know, how to surf. And when I saw those huge waves crashing over me, you know, it was something coming over my head.
Yes.
And it's, you know, the second fear is snakes, of course, which you hear a lot of people say, but, you know,
I have that one.
Right? It's like, where did those things come from? If it's not from an experience in this lifetime, could it be from another lifetime, or is it a phobia somehow?
Well, I mean, phobia is a word that therapists use and doctors use in order to name it something that makes sense, right? So yeah, it could, you know, one, i.e. it could be a phobia, but that doesn't take away from the fact that it was from a past life.
Yeah.
Right? A phobia is just a word, like, you know, schizophrenia or bipolar or mental illness. Those are words to give clarity about what's happening, right? A way to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But it's not black and white. So if I had somebody come to me and say, I'm petrified of being buried alive, I would again work through it. But also, yes, it probably is from a past life. I don't know how much energy work you've done, but I'd ask you to do some energy work about it and maybe work with a shaman in order to release you from it. I personally, when I am in a whole bunch of stuff, all my fears are coming up, I lose my voice. That's my thing. Like, I lose my voice. I can't speak. I did that every year before my parents' anniversary for decades. I would lose my voice for 2 weeks. Wow. You know, why do I have it? Oh, well, because I didn't have a voice. My parents died. I can put those two together. But also just from an energetic place and from past lives, I know I've been strangled 100 times. I mean, I know I've been hung up 100 times. I mean, and my father tried to strangle me as well. So, and I got thrown off the pool too. And so I almost, you know, drowned, right? So, you know, our breath is so precious. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one, I would take away the guilt or shame of even having that. I would be like, yeah, my thing's being buried alive. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, that's mine, right? And I would actually make it okay. And there's nothing wrong with you that you have that. Mm-hmm. That's how your fear shows up. And I bet you money that as you dealt with the emotional fears in your life, those physical fears would decrease, because the brain and body don't know the difference between a physical fear and an emotional fear. So a snake and getting rejected, the body equates it to the exact same thing. It does not know the difference. Mm. So as you are breaking through your emotional fears, your physical fears, I believe, will lessen, decrease, and or minimize or disappear. Mm-hmm. So for instance, I'll give you just one more silly example that obviously does not come near this. I was afraid to sleep in the dark, right? Like, I always had a light on, right? My father lived in my closet for years after he died. And I always had to sleep with a light on. And, or I was drunk. Sleep with a light, drunk.
Or drunk.
Sleeping with somebody, or yeah, right. So remember, I started doing a practice of, you know, a therapist said to me, she goes, your health, you'll be able to watch you become more healthier as you're able to sleep in the dark. Mm. And so I started sleeping with the light on, and then I started sleeping with the light on in the hallway, but having the door wide open. And then I would put the door crack, and then I would have the light on, but the door would be shut, right? And then I'd get a night light. I mean, it took me a long time, but now I sleep in pitch black. And if there's even one light, I'm like, turn that light off, right? But I'm telling you, that was beyond my comprehension to sleep. Like, I could not even, if you would have told me 30 years ago that I'd be sleeping in the dark, I'd like told you you're a crazy person.
Right.
So it's kind of like that. The more that you embrace the fear itself, the more those other things start settling down.
Mm. Do you believe in, like a lot of the neuroscience, a lot of the Joe Dispenza work and the Greg Braden, where they talk a lot about the brain and the plasticity of the brain, and that the more we're starting to recreate new neural pathways as we, so basically if we're leaning into facing the fear and trying new patterns, and like you said, it's rewiring the brain.
Right. And that's why I said, when you're going through that upheaval, as my clients did yesterday, right. It's a cellular shift.
Got it. Okay.
You know, 25, because I've been coaching people since 1995. So, you know, before then, I think about, like, I'll read a diary of myself, like a diary from before, I look at the calendar that I made, like, is there anything good about me? And I look at that girl, and I mean, I don't even have, like, barely a memory of feeling that way. Like, it's just like so not who I am.
On. Yes.
But what I do, Di, is I just look at her, and I know it's me, but I'm saying it in the way I do it. It's like, I look at my 14-year-old and my 16-year-old and my 20-year-old, and I think, how did they do that?
Mm.
Like, I love her.
Mm-hmm.
How did she keep going? I love her. How did she do that? That she did all that work that I get to be me today? What? Mm. You know, that she just kept moving. Like, she just kept going. And I think people do not give the value to keeping going no matter what, because if you keep going, that says something about you. And now we get to put some new skills on top of that, and you are going to break free. Like, right? Like I just kept going. And it wasn't until I had that miraculous experience and got downloaded and understood fear at the core of what it is that my life went different, right? But it took me months to unfold that. I, Rhonda Britton, or I should say Rhonda Wheaton, that's my maiden name, Rhonda Wheaton, just kept going.
Mm. So that's that survival skills. And also, it sounds to me like it's a sign of compassion, self-compassion for each stage of your life, and giving that little one, you know, the compassion.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
16-year-old. I love that 16-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This has been incredible conversation.
Okay, I have one more question though, Di. What happens if you're in partnership, relationship, whatever it looks like? Let's say you've learned some tools. You've learned to live a pretty fearless life.
Yes.
And you're partnered with somebody who lives a complete life in fear.
Yes.
How do you manage that?
It's a great question. And I'll say a couple things about that. One is that the cool thing is once you understand how your fear works, you understand how everybody's fear works.
Mm.
So instead of being frustrated, you know, and be like, why can't they just change? Oh, I see. They have a fear of rejection. Okay, got it. And then you can actually work with that, because you start realizing that, because once again, you see your fear, you're going to see your kids' fears. And you're going to not see their fears, but their core fear. And you're going to see your mate's fear, and you're going to see your mother's fear. And now your level of compassion and seeing their innocence quadruples, right? Like 10 folds. So things that used to bother you don't bother you anymore. I mean, don't get me wrong. Some things will still bother you, right? John Gottman says 5 to 7 uncompromisable.
Yes, 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 yes.
But the things that, but it's not fatal, and it's not, you know, it's not life or death, right? Because you really get that that's their fear. So you're talking to them differently. You're seeing them differently. You're not blaming or shaming them. And as we know, if one person changes, the other person has to change.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now what I know to also be true is that you might also come to the realization that you know, you're going to separate from this relationship, right? Mm. And again, so, you know, but one thing is you are going to see the person instead of blaming the person, or they're like, you'll never use the words, they're like this, and that's why I'm leaving. You will never use those words. because it'll be more based on your needs and what's true for you. And you'll be walking away from an empowered, with an empowered, powerful place rather than blame or shame. Mm-hmm. You will be able to look at your partner, with your mate, your kids and go, okay, got it. I see what's going on. I see how they're responding. I see what they need. And you're going to, like I said, talk to them differently and you'll be shocked and amazed at what's possible.
I'm gonna do this work, Rhonda. I'm really inspired by this conversation. I'm gonna dig deep in this. I love it.
Thank you. Awesome. I'll give you a great example, Pear. I had a man, I was speaking in Louisville, Kentucky, and this man came up to me and he was maybe in his, 55 or whatever. And he came up to me and he goes, oh, I've been watching you on Starting Over. I read all your books, I do everything. And he goes, my wife and I got a divorce. And then she jumps up and he goes, and this is her. And I'm like, okay, waiting for the story punchline. He goes, I started doing fearless living, realized what we had done in our marriage. I went to my ex-wife who were divorced and said to her, would you do this work with me? Mm-hmm. They work. I cannot tell you how many couples say to me, I would not be married without fearless living. Like there is no I could be married. So I have so many testimonials of people like, I got married because of this. I was able to fall in love because of this. I stayed together because of this. I got back together because of this. Because again, it's no longer, what's wrong with that person?
Yeah. It's really coming from love.
So good. Perry, can you share where we can find Rhonda and, our viewers, if they want to check her out and learn more about this?
Well, Rhonda, why don't you share with us the best way that people could reach you if they want to work with you, they want to get more information, because you've got so much, and then also what your free gift is.
Yes.
I want to let people know, we're going to take a little station break here for 1 second, but all of you guys listening to this very powerful interview, be sure and go to our podcast page, ownyourthrone.co, and actually it's our website, it's our landing page, and you'll be able to sign up. And you'll be on our email list and you get all kinds of freebies, which we're going to have Rhonda talk about what she's going to give you as a gift. And if you have not subscribed to our podcast yet, please go to the podcast, Own Your Throne, subscribe, and then also leave a comment. Like, what did you guys learn from this beautiful message today? Share with us. I mean, Diana and I really, we do read these and we want to learn and we want to learn how to make the show better. So please, three things. Podcast, I don't know how to count. Podcast page, subscribe, leave a comment, and then ownyourthrone.co and subscribe and get on our email list so you can get all these freebies. Okay, yep. Rhonda, where can we find you?
Yeah, and Pear, I just want to back you up on that. It's like, listening to us is one thing, but that's not going to change your life.
No.
So, signing up, subscribing, doing all the things you described, are really you making a commitment saying, I am ready to take action?
Yes.
And because again, listening is nice. It's going to give you inspiration. It's going to be like, oh, I'm so happy today. But it's not going to change your life.
Right.
It's going to give you a moment of yay, but full on, it's not going to do it. And then you have more shame and blame because now you're inspired and now you don't change. And now it's like, what's wrong with me? Right. Right. Go on over to fearlessliving.org, fearlessliving.org/risk, RISK. I didn't have time to do this exercise today, so I'm going to give you the whole entire course. It's called Stretch, Risk, and Die, and basically it helps you move out of this place of stuckness. It actually helps you understand if you do procrastinate or, why you can't get something done or why you do get stuck. It's going to explain the entire process, but more importantly, because we don't want to just hear the explanation, we actually want the solution. Mm-hmm. So Stretch, Risk, and Die is an actual tool I created for a client, and now have used it with thousands and hundreds of thousands of clients to help them get unstuck. And you're going to start seeing the difference between emotional and physical fears. So if you've ever done a to-do list, 1 through 10, and you skip 3 and 4, and you keep skipping 3 and 4, mm-hmm. this is going to totally cure you of that.
Oh, I love that.
Go to fearlessliving.org/risk, RISK. And also there's just 3 short videos, there's worksheets. And in the third video, I actually explain the wheel of fear.
Mm.
So a little teaser there.
Fabulous.
I am going to that.
I know, Diane and I are going to do it. Well, that's the good thing about us having this podcast, we have guests on, experts like yourself. I mean, we actually go and do the work and
yeah, it's listen great.
And read and talk about it. And it does we're so blessed to have you, and thank you for talking about this important topic.
Yeah. And we love to end our show with the one question that we ask all of our guests. And as you know, our show is called Own Your Throne. And what does Own Your Throne mean to you?
To me, Own Your Throne means owns your place in the world, own your destiny. Because your throne is your destiny and it is your God-given right. It is your job on this earth. It is your purpose. So own your throne means own your true essence, own who you really are, own the path that you're on, own your throne. You know, for years I wanted to like not be a life coach, and it was like, cause I didn't want to own my throne. I was like, no.
You didn't want that. You didn't want that throne. You wanted another throne.
Throne.
Off with your head.
Or, you know, a different, a richer throne, whatever. it's owning your throne really is embracing the life you're meant to live, not the fantasy, not the pretend, not the like, oh, I wish. It's like, no, you here, you know, you're here to do you. And the more you embrace your throne, the more you're going to shine.
Oh, we love you. That. We love you. You're awesome.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Rhonda. We really, really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
Of it.
Yes. All right, you guys. Listen, don't forget the next episode's coming up in just one more week. But don't forget to go to our podcast page, Own Your Throne, and subscribe and leave comments. And if you have some comments for Rhonda, we'll send those over to her also, so that she can answer some questions that she might have. But thank you for joining us, everyone. And remember, this week, own your throne.
See ya.
This podcast was created by Perry and I because we both met at school getting our master's in spiritual psychology, where we learned the tools and techniques to really heal, reclaim, and redefine the second chapters of our lives.
And you'll also learn some tools and techniques from our guest. All you have to do is go and subscribe and leave some comments. Let us know what you think about the shows, as well as maybe you have some ideas of other guests that we can have.
So enjoy the conversations, and we look forward to hearing from you.
And be sure and check out our website, which is ownyourthrone.co. And we have some freebies for you, so be sure and check us out.